This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Just last week, Girls Not Brides, a global partnership of hundreds of civil society organizations committed to ending child marriage, held its second global meeting here in Kuala Lumpur. Several civil society organizations, United Nations agencies, advocates and activists also banded together to send a strong message to the Pakatan Harapan-led government to put an end to child marriage in Malaysia, which is still permitted under both the Law Reform Marriage and Divorce Act and the Islamic family law. Just last week also, we heard the news of a 41-year-old Malaysian man marrying an 11-year-old Thai girl. Dr. Amjad Rabi, the deputy representative from UNICEF, and he's also a senior policy specialist, joins me now to discuss the cost of inaction if we do not end child marriage immediately. Welcome, Dr. Amjad. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Juliet. I'm doing well. Thank you.
So it's not very often that I get a man on the show, but I understand you've been called a feminist economist as well.
Indeed. It's actually one of the closest maybe title to my heart. It's really great to see that there is interest on issues related to well-being of children and women from economic point of view.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the focus of your research as well?
I've done research. Well, I started as a mathematician, actually, which is quite interesting. But then I took interest in seeing how we can use quantitative models to look at acceleration of ending certain violations of fundamental rights of women and children, building the investment case. Not only to look at it, it's wrong from right perspective, but rather to say it's the wrong thing in terms of economics.
Okay, and we're going to discuss that a little bit later, but I just want to talk about child marriage in general. And, you know, earlier this year, UNICEF actually reported that, you know, although the prevalence of child marriage is decreasing worldwide, you know, we still have a lot to do. What would you say the progress has been?
We must give us some credit. I mean, if we look back historically about the issue of child marriage, if we ask our grandparents, we ask them their peers, yes, it was normal. It was the norm. So now we have really progressed very well. But it's we also as a community and as people who are protecting of the rights of children, we should zero it. It's even if there is one case, we should make it clear that one case is not acceptable. It's in today's the world we live in. For many reasons, we can discuss that. So progress has been made. We are now at 12 million children every year, which getting married before the age of 18, which is still significant, but much less than it used to be. If we give it maybe a perspective, link it to the development, like the economic development worldwide. If we go back at the time of where we have the Declaration of the Human Rights post-Second War, at that time, now from there to here, we increased our GDP, global economy, by tenfold in real term. Okay. So we've done enormously well. In terms of per capita, that's a 260% increase. Yet, where we fail, we didn't translate that economic progress to ending child marriage. We still have more than 680 million women and girls alive today that they were married before the age of 18, and every year we have 12 million. So we've done enormously well in economics in terms of like our well-being, but that did not translate into other fundamental rights, though there is decrease. The point I wanted to make is economic growth is necessary, but insufficient.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess that is something that you are working on as well?
Exactly. We're looking at it also to create the linkages between how we can make the investment case, linking ending child marriage to economic growth. There are many angles to it, but I can give you one example. For instance, I did a study in Nepal. Here in Nepal, a country that has a prevalence rate of 28.6% of girls getting married when they are teens. Mm-hmm. So that translated to a loss of potential income for the country of $1 billion. And that's a significant amount of money. It's actually almost two-thirds what they spend on health care every year. That's a very significant amount of money. So the point you wanted to make is that there is economic cost for inaction. So we've got to factor this in, even in our discussion in Malaysia. We don't have that high prevalence rate like what we've seen in India or in Nepal. But mm-hmm. we know we cannot reach a sustained full status, developed status of Malaysia unless we zero child marriage and zero other issues like inclusivity of the labor market for persons with disability. We need to make it inclusive. So all those little things that previously we could have afforded in Malaysia, mm-hmm. given that we had abundant labor force participation, the youth population, now we are no longer a youth country. It's actually aging. Mm-hmm. So we need to make up for that by closing the gap, making sure that everyone participates fully in the labor market and productively reaching her or his full potential. Not only girls who got married earlier, we need to zero it, but other vulnerable groups as well.
And you actually led a topic, Costing and Budgeting to End Child Marriage, at the Girls Not Brides conference that just concluded last week. Tell me a little bit about that. You know, what was sort of presented?
What we try to do is, again, to highlight the issue that the cause of inaction is child marriage is, in principle, we need to end it. It's a violation of the basic fundamental right of the child. Boys and girls, because we also have incidents of boys getting married. So to make it also clear. But it's also, again, there is an economic cost. The linkages, I think, where we fail to understand, I think the linkages, many times we say, okay, let's wait until the economy grow and these things naturally will go, the trickle-down effect. It works to some extent, but not fully. We see it in Malaysia. This 11-year-old case that we've heard in the news is a reminder for us that economic growth is not the only driver for or the well-being. We affluent society to some extent, but yet we still see such case like this. So what we try to say, to look at, maybe it's not that poverty leads to child marriage. It might have a reverse effect. It might be because a girl that got married, mm-hmm. then that leads to intergenerational transmission of poverty because she will be a mother who is not educated. We know the evidence that she will have likely less information about how to feed her children. So that will also create children malnutrition, which we've seen also statistics on this regard in Malaysia, and that reduces also the education of the child is impacted by the education of the mother, as well as the mother might participate in the labor market when she's not educated, but at lower rate, mm-hmm. and that all together it gives you the story we cover. If I can share this example, maybe it helps us to understand it. If somebody, a researcher, just as a metaphor for a researcher, try to understand what leads lung cancer. So typically the researcher, as any other researcher, will go collect data on household socioeconomic background to create correlation.
For sure.
So what the researcher found, that households with lighters have higher prevalence of lung cancer.
Interesting.
And the conclusion is that lighters lead to lung cancer. And we know that is wrong. It's not the lighter. There is a missing variable that is not the lighter, but rather smoking. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's also we don't want to say poverty is very important, but it's not everything. So poverty is not necessarily leading to child marriage. It's not because Kelantan is one of the poorest states, so that's why we have child marriage. It's similar to lighter leads to lung cancer. There is a missing variable which is related to poverty leading to child marriage. There's many missing variables. The education is a factor of the community. Information, other availability of wider issues, the social norms in the society, not necessarily poverty. Poverty is a driver, but not the only factor. And again, there might be a reverse causality that child marriage leads to poverty. So that's what we try to discuss in the conference you mentioned, in the network meeting of Girls Not the Brides meeting.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine also things about the girls' health as well, the impacts of their health when they get married so young, on their reproduction cycles, their fertility, their, leading, of course, to population growth and things like that. Was that also something?
You're very right. We look at it from different angles as well. The first one is the health of the teenager that get married and then early pregnancy. We know that the evidence, this is medical evidence, that a girl got married, the case we had, 11 years old, from 10 to 15, let's say, mm-hmm. it's five times higher to end up in mortality, the pregnancy to end up in mortality for the mother. It's 5 times higher than if the girl waited from 22 to 25. Sure. I didn't include it in the cost of inaction related to the cost of child marriage. And so that tells us that it's underestimating the numbers I shared, for instance, in Nepal and other countries. It's underestimation of the reality. The reason I didn't include it in the study is we don't want to put value for life. Life is sacred. We cannot put economic value, and I refuse to think about it in economic value. One life matters, and this is very important for us to highlight. We know the evidence is clear. There is health risks to child marriage and through the early pregnancy, unwanted pregnancy. And all of this together, again, it's also a question we need to ask ourselves in Malaysia. Malaysia, the way I look at it, is a model for other countries as a progressive Muslim nation that sets a record for other countries. This is how you can combine modernity and development. Mm-hmm. And are we okay to share this example of 11 years old that is happening in Malaysia to the rest of the world? I was supposed to be interviewed with international media outlets. I refused. It's just like I didn't want to be part of this because Malaysia is more, it's better than this. Morocco, they had the minimum age of 18, and it's a Muslim country. Algeria, they have it at 19. Turkey, they have the minimum age at 18. All of them are Muslim countries. Malaysia is also a Muslim progressive country, and that's, I think, I feel, as a Muslim myself, I feel it's something we really need to highlight. It's we need to set Malaysia as a model for other countries to look up, to learn from how we developed one of the poorest country in 1957 at time of independence to where we are now, a very beautiful, diversified economy, well-educated population. At the same time, we hope to say as very progressive nation as well.
Okay, I'm speaking today to Dr. Amjad Rabi. He is the Deputy Representative and Senior Policy Specialist at UNICEF Malaysia. And we are discussing, child marriage and, basically the cost of inaction, if we don't stop that right now. We'll continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Dr. Amjad Rabi. He is the Deputy Representative and Senior Policy Specialist at UNICEF Malaysia, and we're discussing child marriage and the cost of inaction. We all just saw last week that there was news of an 11-year-old Thai girl being married off to a 41-year-old Malaysian man. Made global headlines. You know, everyone's here as well. Mixed reactions. What was UNICEF's response to that?
At different levels, at individual level and as organizational level. As a father of two girls and one boy, I was honestly horrified. I just cannot believe that we would hear a news like this 11 years old. And we call it marriage. I'm sorry, the use of word is very important. As organization, we issued a statement right away to condemn this horrific act against violating the very basic fundamental right of the girl. And we need to look at it as is. It's a case of a grooming of a 41 years old, grooming a young child for sex activity. Mm-hmm. And this is our position is clear. This is saluting also Data 3, Dr. Wan Aziza, that she said this is not registered. The marriage was not registered here. So then it should be looked at in the angle of the grooming.
Mm-hmm. And she did say that it was illegal, yeah.
Exactly. And this is very important message. We need to set the record straight that child grooming is a criminal activity, sexual offense against children, and this is how it should be looked at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, some people are also blaming the parents, saying that they should be, held accountable for this. A Thai activist actually said that she believes where cases where the parents actually give their children in exchange for something could be considered human trafficking. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's important to look at all issues altogether. I think it's not to blame, but we need to prevent this to happen and also justice for the child. And we need to look at the case. I think it should be investigated thoroughly. My view, my understanding from the media reports is that this is a grooming for sex. And given the position from what we understood, that the parents were for the 41-year-old man. And and that, when we say grooming, it's a process where the predator use different emotional connections, not only with the child, but with the parents. Over sometimes it takes years to develop this emotional connection that lead to a violation like this. So we hope it will be investigated thoroughly and without making any assumptions, but putting all the facts on the table and make sure that we set the record straight for preventing future horrific cases like this. Mm-hmm. And I must also highlight the public reaction. And this is very encouraging. It's not something okay in Malaysia. The yes. public reaction, it sends a strong message. It's not okay. People condemn it to the fullest extent.
And just going on that, you know, people's reaction, I mean, because we did hear mixed reactions, you know, there were some people who said that, you know, under it is the girl agreed to it, therefore it was not a coercion and things like that. And, you know, we're all open to our own opinions, I suppose. But I know that UNICEF, you actually use something called a U-Report tool to survey young people, actually, on their thoughts of child marriage. And what were some of the, I guess, the feedback that you got from that report or from that study?
What's interesting that the overwhelming majority of young people that we saw their reviews rejected it. And this is very good to highlight. But we still had 10% that they thought it's okay. And I would argue that it's because of misinformation. It's just it's sometimes you think about it as a distant case that it's not to my family, it's not me, it doesn't matter to me. Then you make an answer like this. But I will take the discussion step further. Here in Malaysia, we have the definition of a child and maturity of children. We have many definitions, different contexts. We apply different rules. Like, let's look at election. The age of election is 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And then I appreciate that 21, Dr. Mahathir, he looked at lowering it to 18. 18 or 21, but we say, like, the reason why we don't allow or we didn't allow less than 21 is the idea of maturity, that making a decision to vote is that the person is not mature. Mm-hmm. Making a decision to get married, and that is much, much more significant in comparison to election, then we argue yes or no. And this is really, we need to have consistency to send the right message. We are giving red light, green light, and yellow light at the same time, and then confuses everyone. We need to be consistent. If we don't allow it for election, we need to be consistent. Marriage is much, much more significant. Then the case we are talking about, it's 11 years old. And what annoyed me is that the girl, they use the word loved at the age of 8. I'm sorry, this is critical to use the right language. This is, there is no love here. This is like what every father, including like me and mother, we want always our children. I have a daughter, two daughters and one boy. Be careful of sugar daddy. That will give you sugar or candy or other things. We want our children for that. I'm sorry, we need to look at it in this angle. I don't see like the use of love as something that we should factor in. This is very risky. This is a grooming of a child. As I mentioned, it's the process of they use techniques to build a connection, emotional connection, and that's not love. It's psychological manipulation.
And I guess from that study as well, what is the general understanding of child marriage in Malaysia? Do people actually even know it's happening? You know, how do they feel about it?
My view, I mean, from what we hear from young people and consultations also before this, my view, it's rejected widely. Mm-hmm. And the evidence is the very strong outrage and reaction from the public. So I would say it's an isolated incident. It's not as bad as other countries like South Asia, for instance, India, Bangladesh, Nepal. It's widely accepted, much more than Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Yet we still have pockets, some segments of the population that they will look at it as acceptable norm. And I don't want to make it also like Muslims or Malay or... It's actually the statistics we've seen that it's practiced across all ethnic groups and minorities as well with varying degrees. But the statistics we looked at, it showed this as well.
I guess also that, I mean, you could come to the conclusion it also boils down to how much value you place on young girls, on daughters in that sense.
Very important, I think. It's other countries where we've seen it, it's related to the girl in particular, and this is like gender dimension to it. But what's kind of, it's a surprise to me that it's almost equal, boys and girls in Malaysia. We look at the statistics in the census of 2010. There were about 80,000 girls that got married from age 15 to 19. We don't know less than 15 because census of 2010 collected from 15 to 19, and okay. We cannot disagree it. So about 80,000 girls. It's also about 73,000 boys. Okay. And this is not like other countries where you see it, it's discriminatory against a female child. Mm-hmm. But it's, as I said, it's a violation of regardless boy or girl, but it's usually... it's more horrifying for the girl because of health issues as well, pregnancy and other deprivations. And where we see the problem in many countries, including Malaysia, that child marriage leads to not accessing education. Mm-hmm. And that translates later in life into, like, you don't have, as I mentioned earlier, you don't have education, then you become less informed about how you raise your children. And it's not only education knowing ABC, but rather to make informed decisions as well. And also labor market retain on participation of female participants becomes lower. So that's what we've seen in many countries and similar here in Malaysia.
Yeah, so I guess, again, it goes back to that economic burden
exactly,
as well, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What were some other things that were discussed at last week's conference that, you thought were, very important, or, some takeaways that came from that conference?
I think it's I prefer to look at Malaysia as a case because I'll share with you, honestly, I was part of the international committee for this networking meeting. The reason why we selected Malaysia, two reasons. One, logistically, it's very easy, it's accessible. But the other reason is that we looked at Malaysia as a model. It's not to talk about Malaysia, but to talk about other countries and where they can learn from Malaysia.
Okay.
So what was discussed, yes, everything related to child marriage applicable to Malaysia as well. But what surprised us is this case that came right after
the irony of it all.
It's the irony of it. And where we try to promote Malaysia as a model of a successful country. So let's look at the other side of it. Let's hope that this will lead to zero child marriage. Let's end it. Let's look forward. And this is what we need to focus on. Looking forward, how we prevent it and we keep Malaysia as a model for other countries to learn from how the country not only progressed in terms of its economic development and its beautiful infrastructure, but also in terms of the human capital, how Malaysia becomes progressive and model for other countries in this aspect.
So just speaking, about Malaysia, what do you think needs to happen domestically, actually, to prevent child marriage? But not only that, but to also support those who are already married, those who are underage and already married. I mean, I imagine laws alone will not end child marriage.
Exactly. And we know that the experience in Malaysia, laws by themselves without implementation, proper implementation is not sufficient. But we need to highlight that. We need to have the law, the consistency in the law. So we have now here fragmented legal framework across different groups. We need to have minimum age of 18 across all frameworks. This is important message to send, at least in terms of the law. And this is also, we need to highlight that it's a commitment from the Harapan government in the Boko Harapan commitment to end child marriage. So it's a commitment, and commitment, I have all reasons to believe that they will deliver on their commitment. So it's a commitment to have the legal instruments, unification of the minimum age of marriage. But as you rightly said, we shouldn't look only at the legal environment. We know it's also culturally we need to have campaigns, and I'm glad that you are inviting us to discuss the role of the media. It's very important to have the behavior change, all of us to talk about it, to make it non-acceptable. I'll share with you, it's not limited also to Malaysia. It struck me, I was watching with my daughters at younger age, Sleeping Beauty. And then you see Princess Aurora when she slept, and she was waiting for the prince to come and kiss her to wake up.
Her.
And that, the age of marriage, 16. And to me, it's like Disneyland, Disney, they can't just make it 18. Yes, I know the story, it was 16. That was back in the days. But just little change, make it from 16 to 18 can make a difference. Because my daughter, she said, when I become 18, I will get married. And as a father, I almost got heart attack on the spot. I said, all right, we'll talk about it. But those little things in the media, how we talk about the issue, we should make it not cool. It's not right. This is wrong. We should have the right language. So it's not only the law, but also like what is socially acceptable or not. It's also, we need to look at, again, poverty. We discussed it, but it's also also to look holistically about the vulnerable groups and access to cash transfers, the social protection system that responds to the needs of the population. All of this, we don't need somebody to resort to horrifying violation of basic fundamental right of a child because of lack of economic means. That's something for a country like Malaysia, we should have the system to prevent this. And what matters also, because I consider this case of the 11 years old as a grooming case, as sexual offense against child. What matters is educating our children at school of a proper reproductive sex education. When I say sex education, it's not to educate them about sex, but to educate them about the risks. And we live in a world that is very complex. Children have their smartphones at very young age. Predators, they can come in many, many forms. We need them to understand that, to understand this, their behaviors and how to say no, how to all the risks out there. We need to modernize how we teach these issues at school. We usually look at them from biology, science point of view, but rather we need to look at it also a broader view. So I think that will be a significant way to end child marriage as well.
Just going on that topic, just on what you said about how you view this as sexual grooming, for example, right? The 11-year-old girl with the 41-year-old man. I mean, like last year, India's Supreme Court, you know, where I think child marriage is very rampant, they actually made a landmark decision that ruled that sex with a child is always rape, and which quashed a clause, you know, that allowed men to have sex with underage girls if they were married to them. I guess that is something also that would be, I mean, welcomed?
Very much, very much. Again, we need to look at things the way they are. Like 11 years old, that to say I loved at 8 years old, this is not love, this is not, it's rape. Mm-hmm. And this is where we need to close the legal gaps. First priority for me when I hear the story is, as a father here, is what happens to the 11-year-old girl. Like, this is really, I wish I could fly to Clinton and do something, you know. This is the first reaction. So at least we need to make sure it will never happen to any girl. So we need to close all the legal and treat things as they are. We have the Act Against Offenses Against Children passed in 2017.
Yep.
We really need to act on it. Related to this also, where we can make a difference, we called for the establishment of commissioner, child rights commissioner, right after, it's actually before even with the previous government. But right after the election of Dr. Tun Mahathir as the prime minister, I sent a congratulatory note picked up also by the media. But the first thing I asked is the establishment of a commissioner. And this is very important, not only for child marriage, but other issues. And we wanted it to become independent from the executive branch of the government, so independent from the government, and report directly to the parliament. And this is how we create the check and balance, not only for child marriage like this case in particular, but for instance, when we issued a report last year, actually this year, on urban poverty. Mm-hmm. It went to the parliament, and the Minister of Education at that time, he trashed it. He said, no, it's not valid.
Yeah.
But if we have an independent commissioner at the parliament that look at the evidence and issue an independent statement, whether it is for or against the government, but independent from the government, that matters, because it cannot be just a trash. Members of the parliament has the right to question the government, but they need the information to base their judgment on. And this is what we call to create the check and balance. Have child rights commissioner report directly to the parliament, independent from the executive branch of the government. A violation like this, they will make a statement based on information, correct information, and best interest of the child. And Malaysia's Malaysia's commitment for international legal instruments, they look at the totality of it, best interest of the child, and issue an independent statement. I hope we can take this opportunity to move forward on this. It does not cost us anything. It's very little amount of money to hire a commissioner and two deputies and scholars to support them. But it will create the check and balance. And also for us maybe to understand that any community or interest group, if you take any right of them, they will go demonstrate in the street, they will write to the media, they will do what it takes to protect their rights, except children. Children voiceless to some extent. So if they are voiceless and big decisions are made on their behalf by adults, at least we need to have a voice for them to represent them in the parliament to act on their best interest, and that can be the commissioner. And this is very important. Now we will start talking about the next year budget. There will be budget cuts, I understand, because of course, like the national debt and removal of GST.
GST, yeah.
We need to make sure that the cuts will not be at the expense of the well-being of children, because this is not only a future of Malaysia, but it's also like the current. Like children, it matters. If we cut in certain areas, that might create long-term consequence to that. So we need to have that independence voice that will look at totality of things, whether it's the budget or whether it's this case. We've seen like we can give it also quasi-legal authority to investigate or initiate legal investigation on in a case like this. If nobody made any police report on this case, at least the commissioner will initiate it.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, I just wanted to thank you very much and remind all of us the role of everyone. It's child issues. It's the issue of everyone.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Amjad Rabi. He's the Deputy Representative and Senior Policy Specialist at UNICEF Malaysia. And we were discussing the cost of inaction for child marriage in Malaysia. If you'd like to find out more about UNICEF, the website is unicef.org. And if you missed any part of this interview or any previous Feminist Fridays interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.